So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 17, Text 1-6. Tawadhi dutya sahasa vrajya vyajamanatma bhursa vavridhati smasarena kayena dripativa tawadhi dutya sahasa vyajamanatma bhursa vavridhati smasarena kayena dripativa. Translation? These two demons who appeared in ancient times. This is not working? These two demons who appeared in ancient times soon began to exhibit uncommon bodily features. They had steel-like frames, which began to grow just like two great mountains. Please respond to repeat. These two demons who appeared in ancient times soon began to exhibit uncommon bodily features. They had steel-like frames, which began to grow just like two great mountains. So let's listen to Srila Prabhupada's purport with attentive attention. Sometimes the people, they use the tautology, which is against the traditional English grammar, to re-emphasize what they have to say. So, I hear them say sometimes, attentive attention. I think the acharyas would prefer to use rapt attention. There are two classes of men in the world. One is called and the other is called Sura, Asura, or a devotee and a demon, or the demigods and the demon, or Sura and Asura. The demigods concern themselves with the spiritual upliftment of human society, whereas the demons are concerned with physical and material upliftment. So again, Papa is bringing to the line like that. Just the quality is what makes someone a demon or a demigod. It's not that someone is born with some horns or three heads or 10 hands. It's just the quality. The two demons born of deity began to make their bodies as strong as iron frames, and they were so tall that they seemed to touch outer space. They were decorated with valuable ornaments, and they thought that this was success in life. Originally, it was planned that Jaya and Vijaya, the two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, were to take birth in this material world, where, by the curse of the sages, they were to play the part of always being angry with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As demoniac persons, they became so angry that they were not concerned with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply with physical comforts and physical upliftment. Oh, Jana Timuranda Shagana Janam Salaga Satsun Militam Jena Tasma Si Guru Namaha Zichetanya Manobistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vandeham Si Gurum Si Yutupadakamalam Si Gurum Vaishnavam Chav Si Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitamtam Samsajivam Sadveta Sarvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Si Radha Krishna Padha Sahagana Lalita Si Visakam Vitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanum Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Taribhyacha Kripa Sundobhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivatsari Gorpa Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam karoti vachalam pangyum lagat yakripat mahavande si gurum dilatari Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pesai Bhuta Vishnu Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pesai Bhuta Vishnu Namaste Bhakti Vedam Swami Tinama Namaste Sarasati Deva Gaura Vani Chari Nini Vishisa Swami Vani Pachapati So, we are resuming our meeting this morning. We've been having some series of meetings, and this is just a continuation of the past meeting. Sometimes people meet. I remember in those days when some management in ISKCON, I remember one day we met for 14 hours or 12 hours. The whole night there was no sleep. Just trying to solve problems. But this meeting, we are not just trying to solve material problems. We are discussing about Lord Krishna, which is very purifying. And here, it's mentioned here, these two demons will appear. These two demons who appeared in the ancient times soon began to exhibit uncommon body features. They are still like frames, which began to grow just like two great mountains. And in the purport here, Papa again mentioned some things which we would like us to discuss and to share. One thing and that is pertinent to modern day degradation is that the concept of anger, not a concept, it's a construct. We'll find that Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that there are two classes of men in this world. You know the verse, that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Dua Bhuta Sarva Lokeshmi Sura Asura Evasa. So Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that in this material world, there are two classes of beings. In this loka, there are two people, the Sura and Asura, the demigods and the demons.
In other words, the devotees and the non-devotees. So, based on Prabhupada's explication and his purpose, it simply implies that the distinction between the two classes is a matter of quality. It's a matter of quality. Because it's unlike Hiranyakashipu, that, you know, the sages knew they were coming from the spiritual world, I mean, they're coming from Vaikuntha, and they've been cursed to take birth in the Vaikuntha, I mean, in the material world, by who?
The four Kumaras.
You know the four Kumaras? You know them? You met them? they are little boys, Brahma's children. Brahma told those four little boys that help me to populate the universe. We need people in this universe. And they objected to Brahma's instruction. No one can object a father's instruction. No one can object Guru's instruction. That if the father tells you, no, you cannot be a devotee, I want you to help me in, you know, taking care of my money, what will you do? He said, I have from the scriptures that no one can disobey his father. Therefore, yes, daddy, no problem. No, it's not like that. So, these four Kumaras, Brahma told them, Brahma is also their spiritual master. Because Lord Brahma first received this Vedic knowledge directly from Lord Vishnu, from within the heart. And when the Kumaras were asked to help their father, Brahma, to populate the universe, they objected. They rather vowed to perfect their existence in devotional service, in spiritual pursuit. And in order not to get entangled, they chose to remain like little boys for the whole of their life duration. No, little naked boys, who cares about them? Huh? It is when the person has attained pubescence, attained adulthood, then he begins to think of how to enjoy this world. Begin to think of the mature guy. The little boy just thinking about what to eat, how to run around and play. So the Kumara said, we will attain little boys' bodies. So no way. No entanglement, no either of mindset of trying to enjoy this material world. And when these Kumaras, when they came to see Lord Vishnu, they were disappointed by the attitude of the gate men. This happens most of the times when you know someone very well and you're going to see the person in the office. And the secretary just creates so much of problems. You can't go to see him, you can't go to see her. He is busy or she is busy. He is in a meeting or she is in a meeting. And meeting, when I was a little boy, I used to think that when you go to someone's office and then they say he's in a meeting, it means that he's really with many people and they're in a conference and all this stuff. But meeting could just mean just his friend discussing with him. So, they were disappointed by the attitude of Jaya Mijaya, and that led to a curse of Jaya Mijaya to descend to the material world. And of course, it's also explained in the Bhagavatam that Jaya and Jaya had an inappropriate attitude towards Lakshmiji. When Lakshmiji one time was coming into Vaikuntha, she went for some jog trot, in quote. You know, we devotees also sometimes will go for a jog trot. We call it japa. Okay? But, you know, everybody needs some leisure time, you know, to move out of the premises. No matter how opulent your house is, you like to move out to take fresh air. So Lakshmi Devi, she moved out to take some fresh air. She was coming back to see Narayan, and Jaya and Vijaya checkmated her. A stubborn boys, right? Because you should worship the wife as well as you will worship your boss. And the wife is coming, and then they had a god to checkmate her. So Lakshmi was not very happy. And of course, Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu, he could take any type of offenses, but Lakshmi doesn't take every offense. You know, also in the case of Bhrigu, when Bhrigu has to go and do his research, you know that story? Bhrigu went for some research to figure out who is the supreme among Vishnu, Shiva, and Lord Brahma. And when Bhrigu went to Vishnu, he committed gross offense, stepping on the chest of Vishnu. Lakshmi didn't take it kindly. So she's actually in the mood of, you know, it's natural, you know. A woman should make sure that the husband is protected. Although the husband is actually the one who protects the woman, but a woman will never. So be careful. If you're dealing with somebody who is married and the wife is there, even as devotees, make sure you treat the man nicely. If you want to engage him, don't just order him, come here. Please, Prabhu, is it possible that you have to do this? Because based on how you talk to the husband, the wife can take offense. I know one Mataji in one temple, I don't want to mention the temple, in one of the recent temples I visited. And you know, I saw this gentleman 3 consecutive mornings from Mangarati. So I became interested in him. I said, come here. So where do you stay? What type of job you do? Why your family doesn't come with you? Your wife doesn't come with you? Then he gave some explanation. The wife is working. He is out of job now because of retrenchment. That he made wanting. That the wife is angry because she doesn't seem to tolerate the way the man was treated by some authority, the temple authority, when he came to the temple and they were to engage him, and the way they acted was not with proper mannerism, and the wife took offense. So I said, can I speak to her? He said that she's very infuriated now. Anything has to do with devotees, she wouldn't want to speak with you. I said, please, just tell her that somebody wants to speak with her. And I pleaded with him to convince him to just relate, get my message across to her. And he was very skeptical that. He said he knows his wife, that she wouldn't. Anyway, I pressed on him. And then later he said, all right, he will raise the issue with her. So we're in the temple. Then, you know, one devotee called me that, oh, it's not just a person that's calling for you. His wife is on the phone, that the wife wants to talk with you. I said, Jai. And I spoke with her, and then she opened up that, yes, this is what happened, and, you know, someone, the way they treated the husband, she doesn't like it, and all this. Therefore, we have to be careful when you're dealing with married people. We're dealing with brahmacharis and sannyasis, there's no problem. You can order him anyhow, but make sure you don't act in an offensive way, especially those who are supposedly in management, senior devotees, those who are engaging people, make sure you don't ask in any way that will hurt a man's wife when he's there with his wife. Because it could result to her completely abandoning the temple, not coming at all. Anyway, we made a schedule to meet with her. So she said she wants me to come to her house. So I went there with the temple president of that temple, and we had a chat with the family. They have two kids. One of them has finished college, she's working. The girl is 19, she's still in college and working at the same time. And then at the end of it all, she was so happy. Until when we were to leave, she couldn't hide her feelings. She said, "I'm so happy with you, Maharaj, for coming, and I promise you that I'll be going back to the temple." So we're very much relieved of that anxiety. So the point is, Lakshmiji, just like every other woman, could take offense when someone offends her husband. So the case of Bhrigu, and this, of course, the Kumara's case, I mean the Jayavijaya's case, some personal insult to Lakshmiji herself. If she couldn't take insult for the husband, is it insult to her that she would, she would take? No way. So the point here, and the Prabhupada mentioned some important things. There are two types of people, the demons and then the demigods. The devotees are having all the qualities of the demigod. If one becomes engaged in devotional service, automatically one begins to develop the qualities of the devatas. And therefore there is no separate endeavor to try to develop the qualities of the devatas or saintly qualities. Because if one is involved, the more one becomes engaged in devotional service, devotional service is like fire, like a big heap of fire. And whatever you put into the fire acquire the qualities of fire or is burned to ashes. Two things. Whatever you put to the fire, in the fire becomes, if it is an iron, if it is a metal, it acquires the qualities of the fire. If it is not, then the fire will burn into ashes. And so we find the common analogy given by Prabhupada is that if you put a nail in the fire, the nail gradually attains the qualities of fire. It becomes red hot. And not only hot, but it could burn you if you use it to touch your body. Therefore, a devotee is like a nail who is put in the fire of devotional service. And when one becomes engaged in devotional service, the whole of one's existence becomes transformed to that of heavenly or godly qualities. Therefore, we find that even people who are having the worst of habits, the worst of behaviors, could be transformed into great devotees. And the typical case is the case of, yes. Oh. In the Chaitanya pastime. In the Chaitanya's pastime. Yes. Typical example is who and who in the case that if one becomes engaged in devotional service, one will be transformed completely to saintly person. Okay, help us. Jagai and Mandai. Jagai and Mandai, they were debauches. They were debauching is that is a derogatory term. They were involved in human hunting, women hunting, and all types of intoxication. Drug abuse is not just a today's team. The giant vision, I mean, Jagamanda, they were the worst type of drug abusers. Not only drug abusers, women abusers. Not only women abusers, children abusers. They do all type of abuses. So, these horrible qualities have always been there in the universe. Even child abuse. Look, Hiranya Kasipu, who, tell me, who is the worst of child abusers than Hiranya Kasipu? So sometimes we think that, you know, these bad things are only happening now because of Kali Yoga. Bad things have also been there right from the beginning. It's just that the percentage has not been so high. And one person could do the worst of any bad thing. And so these demons, they have always been there. And society, their own major accomplishments is to dress very nicely. To dress very nicely. That's it. And so now, when they see devotees, you know, dress in simple dress, just some, they say we tie bed sheets. Why you guys are tying bed sheets? They are not happy with the devotees because it's like a counterculture, it's like a revolution. So each time you go into the midst of people who dress very nice, three-piece suit, and you dress simple, it's like you're a revolutionary. And that is exactly what I experienced when I went to North Carolina Political Science Association annual conference. And because I didn't dress in three-piece suit, you know, the professor who was in charge of our panel, the chairman of our panel, he said, Vasudev, you are a revolutionary. That was just in the open. He said, you are a revolutionary. I said, why, sir? He said, I've read your paper. I've heard what you presented here. It's heavily loaded. But you came here, you dressed very simple. Look, all of these professors, everybody came with a big suitcase, a three-piece suit, a tie. And you came very simple. And you served like a Buddha. He knows about Buddha. So he said, you served like a Buddha because, you know, I said. So it's like a big challenge to them. The guy, he has a lot of stuff. He's a revolutionary because he didn't dress like us. He dressed very simple. And frankly speaking, I did put on a pants. I put on a pants. It's just that, I mean, I didn't care about, you know, putting on all their three-piece suit and all this. Still, they were not happy. So when they see the devotees that, you know, they dress very simple, oh, they are not with us. They are against us. That's the whole, that's the undertone. They are against us. The demons are thinking, these people, they are against us. They don't dress sophisticatedly. You don't put these ornaments, we have to put on gold chains. And so it becomes, they see us like a counterculture. And that's why they tag us in those days as a cult. So, the point is, the demons, they are after ornamenting their bodies, dress very nicely and eat very nicely. That's it. That is the purpose of life. And when they eat very nicely, what next? And they're not satisfied with sleeping alone. They must live with the opposite sex. So that is how the demons think this world is simply created for their own satisfaction, for their own enjoyment, for them to exploit the resources of nature. But the demigods or the devotees, they are aware that this world is meant for enjoyment of Lord Krishna. Therefore, we go out our way to gather all of the resources available at our disposal and offer that to Lord Krishna. The demons, they also gather all of the resources available at their disposal and then offer that to themselves. Because they are the deities. So one may say, why are people worshipping deities? Everyone is worshipping deities in this world. Everybody is worshipping a deity. Some people are worshipping their bodies as their deities. Some people use like 1 hour to be before the mirror. Especially the women celebrities. They use like 1 hour, 30 minutes or 2 hours just to decorate themselves. That much time, I remember when I was a brahmachari and I was doing pujari work. We'll go to the altar at about just after Mangalarati, 5 o'clock. And before you come out, it's 7:15. Before you finish, it's 7:15. That much time we use in decorating the deities, giving a bath to the deities, cleaning them up, decorating them. The demons, they use that much time in taking care of themselves. That is not even exclusive of going to the shower. Just when they finish, just to decorate alone. So they are deities, isn't it? They worship with deities for themselves and for their colleagues and for their friends. So what the demons do, we also do that, but we do that for the satisfaction of the Lord. We also decorate the Lord. The demons decorate themselves and they care so much for themselves. We cook also for the Lord. So the difference is that we are doing everything for Lord Krishna and they are doing everything for themselves. And in this way they get entangled in this material world and the devotees get spiritual emancipation. The process of devotional service is purifying like a forest fire. That you put anything inside, it burns. A forest fire burns all of the snakes in the forest. Therefore, if one engages in devotional service itself burns all of the vices of the living entity. Therefore, we see that the people live horrible walks of life. Typical example is the case of Jaya and Vijay, and just by surrendering unto Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's mission, engaging in devotional service, one becomes cleansed and becomes a sinless person. Now, Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that these demons, they are prone to anger. In fact, that is how they are designed. The main thing for them to come into this world is that they should be very angry. Not only just being angry with everybody or with the least offense, they are angry with the Lord. They are angry with the devotees of the Lord. If they are angry with the Lord, it means they are angry with the devotees of the Lord. And the typical case is the case of Jaya and Vijaya. When they hear about Vishnu, oh, they're very angry. Hiranyakasipu, he was so angry when he hears Prahlad chant Vishnu's names. Everybody's worshipping me, and you are calling somebody else. So anger is not a very good emotion. Anger destroys. Medical science have proven that anger actually reduces the man's lifespan. Each time you are angry, the body produces some type of toxins that is popped into the blood, poisons the blood. And so, the psychologists or the psychotherapists, they have another conception that no, anger, you just have to let it flow. Don't control it. Just let it flow. But the medical scientists, they say this ego, this is what it produces. And therefore, we find that, you know, the devotees at all circumstances, there's an advantage, because Krishna taught us how to control anger. You know that story? You know, anger therapy from the Vaishnava Vedantic perspective? You know, everything, the funny thing is, everything is there in the Vedic literature. Everything. It's just a matter of opening your eyes and read voraciously. Anger management is there in the Vedic literature. I tell you, the rudiments. One time, Krishna, Balaram, and Satyaki, they went for what modern day boys will call a ride. But it was not a ride per se. They went to the countryside, just they traveled out just to see places. And as they were out, they got a point whereby it was night, so they decided, okay, we have to sleep here. But no, we can't just sleep. Everybody cannot just go to sleep. One person has to be on guard, whereas two people sleep. So Satyaki was the first one who had to be on guard, whereas Balaram and Krishna, they went to sleep. He has to guide for some hours. And as Satyaki was on guard, one Rakshasa came to him. This Rakshasa very well introduced himself. I am a man eater. I'm a Rakshasa. I will spare you. If you allow me to eat the other of your two friends who are sleeping, I will spare you. So Satyaki was very upset. He was very angry. Krishna and Balaram are more dear to me than life itself. Are you dare to suggest that? So the Rakshasa was pacifying him. Look, you are just making noise. You don't know my power. You don't know my prowess. See, I'm sympathizing with you, you know, because you are a small boy. And see, within a twinkle of an eye, I can just eat you up. I said, I will spare you and eat your friends. Is that not good enough? Am I not considerate enough? Satyaki became more angry. And as he was angry, as he became more furious, you know, this Rakshasa was increasing in size and in height. It was getting bigger. The more Satyaki became angry, Rakshasa was simply increasing in size. So Satyaki challenged him to a fight. For being bold to come and make that statement, I challenge you to a fight. So they started fighting. And they fought until Satyaki was terribly tired. The only savior for Satyaki was, at some point in time, it was time for Balaram to take over as a guard. And he had to leave the Rakshasa to go and sleep so that Balaram would come and take over. And the Rakshasa left. As he left, Balaram took over. Satyaki didn't tell Balaram what happened. Because he was so tired, I mean, all it needed just to rest. So immediately he lied down, he was gone. Sleep. So, as Balaram was on guard, this same Rakshasa came to Balaram and said, "I am a Rakshasa. My food is human flesh. If you allow me to eat your two friends who are sleeping, I will spare you. You can become comrades." And immediately he said that Balaram challenged him that, you know that I am Lord Balaram. And that is my brother, Lord Krishna. That is our friend Satyaki. You don't know me? The demon just laughed and said, "See, I'm just being sincere with you. Let me eat your two friends and I'll spare you." So Balaram was very angry. And because they couldn't agree, so the result would be that, you know, we have to flex muscles. So there was muscle flexing again. And Balaram was very angry. And as they fought, he was fighting this Rakshasa with so much of fury, so much of anger. And as he become, as his fury increases, so the demon increases in size. Increases in height, size, everything. At some point in time, his face couldn't even be seen. Face had gone right into the sky. And they fought until Balaram was completely wrecked out, tired. And then it was time for Krishna to take over as a god. Balaram has to go and sleep. He didn't tell Krishna what happened. The demon left. Krishna took over. Immediately the Rakshasa came back and told Krishna the same thing. "Let me eat those two boys and I'll spare you." What did Krishna do? Krishna just burst into laughter. He laughed. The demon, the Rakshasa said, "I am serious and you're just laughing. This is a serious matter. Would you allow me to eat them and I spare you?" Krishna just burst into laughter again and was laughing. So the demon was surprised because the other two people, he met, this is completely different guy who didn't take him seriously and he was just laughing. What is this? And you know what? As Krishna was laughing, this demon was reducing in size. And the more Krishna will be laughing and joking with him, Krishna will tell him, "Oh, you are really in the mood of joking." Because if you are not in the mood of joking, how could you make this proposal? So Krishna will just burst into laughter. And the more Krishna was laughing, this demon will reduce, until it became like a small ball. So Krishna put it inside his pocket. So when everyone woke up, dumb. And so Satyaki was complaining that, "I had a terrible experience last night when I was on guard. You know, this Rakshasa came to me. I made this proposal and I was so angry with him. And I challenged him to a fight, but he was so powerful. I couldn't defeat him at all. I became completely fatigued and the only resort was to come to sleep. That time Balaram was to take over." Balaram said, "But you didn't even tell me. The same guy came to me." And Krishna just put his hand inside his pocket. "Is it this guy?" So Krishna explained to them that this is personified. Now, when you encounter some agitation from someone and you become angry, you simply inflame anger. You make things worse because, like, you've been defeated. It's like someone coming to test you and you fall a victim to that test. Instead of passing the test, you become a victim. So each time, Krishna explained, each time someone comes to agitate you, be yourself. Think of ways on how to help that person. Be proactive. And we see in the case of Krishna, he was proactive. Whereas in the case of Satyaki and Balaram, they were reactive. And so by being proactive, Krishna can completely control this personality, the anger. And the more we are proactive, the person, take for instance, if someone comes to you, we're talking about anger because the Papa mentions here that anger is one of the worst words of the demons. Someone becomes overly, in fact, wars are fought on the basis of anger. If someone is not angry, how will you resort to violence? You will not resort to war. So, according to Krishna's thesis, the idea is that if one becomes agitated, if someone comes agitated, agitators, then we should be proactive. And the person's anger will become pulverized. And in the case of a couple, that they were having some friction, the man and the husband, they were having some friction. And then, husband was away. And then there was some program, husband has to come to assist in the home. But when the husband came, he acted as if there was no fight at all, there's no problem. He was doing everything, helping here, helping there. So the wife was surprised. He called him over and said, "I'm fighting you. And you're not fighting back." Therefore, everything is over. Yeah, because if you fight someone back, it's like, you know, you come to the same level. Yeah, I'm hungry, you're angry. I mean, the same thing, the same level. Therefore, one of the technologies that even Bhaktivedanta gave was that whenever there is a conflict, someone, whether you're right or you're wrong, someone feels hurt, immediately we should take a humble position to placate that person by making a humble submission that I am the cause of the problem. I'm sorry. Forgive me. So how can we get along? How can we serve together? Now it's so difficult for someone to be humble. But as devotees, we know we are not this body. So saying, "I'm sorry," if even you're right or wrong, in as much as someone feels hurt, just telling someone, "I'm sorry," from the bottom of our heart will pulverize that person's false ego. And he will feel, I am the one. Because if someone knows he's the one who came to agitate you, or she is the one who came, and you assume a humble position to say, I'm the cause of the problem. I'm sorry. So how can we get along to solve problems? The ego will be pulverized. And he will be sorry within himself or herself what he or she did. And that is how to be able to deal with anger. Because every day we encounter situations whereby this demon personified comes to put us to shame, comes to tempt us. And sometimes we fail the test and later we begin to regret. Why did I not pass that test? So we will not have anger personified come in the form of a rakshasa to test us. But anger personified could even use the devotees around us to put us to test. Therefore, we have to be wary about anger, because it is very destructive. It's destructive to our health and destructive to our social connections. It's destructive to our spiritual growth. So, these demonic qualities, we have to watch out, because we are trying to grow in devotional service. And these negative qualities, these vices, negative emotions, are living with us. They are living with us. Therefore, we have to properly take shelter of Prabhupada. We have to properly take shelter of the devotees. Sometimes we say, well, I have an instruction from my guru, and I just please my guru, and everybody else can go to hell. I have a guru, I please him, finish. You, who cares? But it shouldn't be like that, because the devotees are the weapons of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we offend a devotee in the garb of trying to please our spiritual master, we will run into difficulties, serious difficulties. So we have to be careful. And even when we are executing the instructions of the spiritual master, we do that with caution, with care, so that we don't unnecessarily hurt people. We may be doing wonderful service to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there are quite a number of examples of that in the Sastra. You know the case where Hanuman was busy helping Ramachandra, and he became offensive to others who were also doing their little best, but in a very small way. He didn't see that he was doing so much, so he felt, come on. Behram told him, no, that's not the way. That's not the way. They are also doing their part. So we shouldn't think, oh, I'm the greatest collector, I'm doing the biggest service, very pleasing to Prabhupada, and everybody else, they are not doing anything, they are just in Maya. Everybody else is just in Maya. You are in Maya, you are in Maya, you are in Maya. I am the one who is. This is not what Krishna wants. Krishna always checks this ego amongst his devotees. And a typical case is there in the case of Garuda, when Krishna asked him to go and Krishna perceived that Garuda was becoming a little bit puffed up. You know, Garuda is carrying Krishna, and it's a very powerful bird. Tendency is, we are doing wonderful service, and then, you know, we could also become puffed up. I'm a big scholar. And nobody else is doing any service. All of me, I'm doing just wonderful service. Proper. So Krishna doesn't want this. And he showed Garuda. And also, Krishna doesn't want his devotees to be bought over by pride. And it could be dangerous. Pride is not a devotional quality. It's not a suric quality. It is asuric quality. In the Gita, chapter 16, Krishna mentions about all of this. Demonic qualities. Side by side with the divine qualities. And so, those things are there for us to be able to, you know, see where we fit into and see how we can make some adjustment in our devotional life so that we don't get carried away by the material image. At every step, in a material world, we could always encounter some difficulty, even in our devotional service. But we have to be careful. And it makes it easy when we are taking shelter of each other. When we're taking shelter of each other, it makes it easy for us. So anger here is a big obstacle on the part of devotional service. The demons are the ones who exhibit this. Jaya and Vijay, when he fell down, they perfectly exhibited this in their bodies as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. Hiranyaksha was very much angry when Lord Vishnu went to reposition the earth, to taking the earth from the filthy place, right down in the dungeon. He was very angry. How could you do this? I pushed this in there, you will have the God to go and bring it. Why do they repair? Let everything be destroyed. Why do they maintain it? Everything should be destroyed. So, but there are some people who have to do the maintenance. And we should be part of the crew who should help to reposition things. Vishnu himself personally showed that example. When the earth was in the dungeon, was pushed down, Vishnu came as an appropriate incarnation, as a boa. Boa romances with fields. Boa likes filthy places. He likes it. That's where he enjoys. So the Lord assumed that form to be able to, you know, to take the earth and reposition. He's going to a filthy place, so he took a particular form. Just see the mercy of the Lord. Because of us, he has assumed the form of a boar. Instead of enjoying in a Vaikunthas with Lakshmiji, he took the form of a boar just because of us. Come on, let's think about this. How Lord Krishna is so merciful, is so compassionate, that he took the form of a boar. Think about this. So, if the Lord is that merciful, is so concerned about us, won't we be concerned for others? And won't we be concerned for ourselves? Why not? So, this is material world. Demons will always be there. Demonic qualities will always be there. But we have to transform these demonic qualities into divine qualities in devotional service. He said in the verse that the frames of these demons, they were so strong. You know, there are all these, you know, strongly built guys who are wrestlers. You know, you see them sometimes, on TV, you know, they exercising themselves here and there, muscle building and all those things. They're demonic qualities. According to the Bhagavad Gita. They do that for what? They develop those muscles and power, steel frames to beat people, to beat people and take their money from them. Because sometimes if you're carrying a gun, for instance, a gun and rob, immediately sometimes you could be detected and you'll be apprehended. But if you just have some, you know, if you just get trained in just killing people, I know in karate, like in some disciplines in karate, you don't need a gun to kill someone. You don't need a gun. There are places you touch somebody even with just with a left hand, but depending on how you place your palm, and you could kill somebody. So people also do those things just not only to help themselves. In some cases, they just do that not only to defend themselves, but to use it to injure people or even to rob. listen to Buddha. If one has those qualities and he used to defend the devotees, great. But in most cases, we find that people who are doing that, they don't do that to defend the temple. They don't do that. They don't even know the temple anymore. So, it's mentioned here how Jaya Vijaya, Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, these demons, they have steel frames. And see, again, the Bhagavatam is so perfectly composed. In the next verse, you'll find in graphic details how twins are born. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, they are born twins. In the next verse, Prabhupada explains in the purport vividly what really happens with the conception and what happens when twins, the person, the one who God conceived first, will be the last one even to be born. So the Bhagavatam is very complete, very powerful. We should find time to invest our energy and read it about so that we get purified and so that we have also become equipped with knowledge. If somebody talks some rotten thing out there, when you look the person and laugh, just like Lord Krishna laughed at the Rakshasa when he came to propose that, make his proposal to him. We don't necessarily have to be angry when people say the wrong things at the wrong time, and we don't need to take offense if they even think that we have offended them. Rather, we should accept a humble position and be able to create a conducive atmosphere for harmonious relationship. In other words, we need to be proactive in dealing with people in this material world, because everybody is virtually imbued with demonic qualities. So we have to show the difference. That is the import of this very verse. We have to show the difference. The devotees have to show the difference. If someone comes to agitate us and then we got carried away with the anger, then what is the difference between oneself and then the non-devotees? So these are qualities that are vast, that are of opposite polarity to devotional culture and to spiritual development. So we have to see how we are transforming them in devotional service by constantly engaging Lord Krishna's devotional service. Hare Krishna. Amen. Are there some comments, some questions at this point? Yes. Mukunda? Qualities is what matters. Bhaktivinoda was mentioned, I think I was mentioned the other day. Bhaktivinoda was saying that some put on a big tilak and very nice devotional attire, and they come to the temple and take away another person's wife. That doesn't make him a devotee, because he puts on a big tilak and he puts on a very nice, very well ironed dress. Then we may go to the extreme. Okay, I had Mara Stella this other day. Okay, now I'm not going to iron my clothes. I just appear rough and all this. And no. Again, because the people don't even like our dress. The non-devotees, they don't even like this bedsheet we put on. Okay, they call it bedsheet. And therefore, when we are going out, we should appear neat. It's a public relation, and this should go down to the devotees. If we are going out, the people are watching us. If we appear so rough, we don't care, we just wash our clothes and then squeeze it and put it inside some box, and then we want to go out, we are devotees, we are not this body, come on. And the shed is very rough. And we go out with it, we are not helping Prabhupada's mission, because people are not going to be enthused by our external rough attire. We should appear neat. I remember in New Vrindavan, there was this family that, you know, a girl is 9, the boy is 3 years. And so I saw the boy was putting arms on Dhoti, and the Dhoti was torn. So I became very upset. I called him, and because I was there with the father, I was discussing with the father. So I told the boy that, you're in a public place, you know, even in your house, you shouldn't put on this type of dirty. He's torn now, and here he's dirty also. So he felt very cold. So I said, anyway, when you get back home, make sure that you change this dirty and you don't put on any torn dirty to any public garden, to the temple. Coming to the temple, you'd appear very cute because you're coming to see the Lord. So he went away cold. And then the father told me that, oh, he's very rough. He plays all the while. This dirty, just a new clean dirty, he went to play on top of some steel frame and then almost enjoyed himself. Dirty got to. But then the little boy, he took those words to heart, what I told him. And then I think later he went to agitate the mother to go and change his dirty, change his dress, because also the dress, the kutta, I told him, if you want us to be friends, any time I see you, your kutta should be very clean and your dirty should be very clean and they should be the same color. So I haven't forgot even the encounter. So I think after some hours later, I saw one little boy, he came to me, he climbed on me. I said, who is this? I told him it was this same boy. Then he said, Maharaj, do I look cute? I said, yes, you are. So even little boys, I mean, it matters to them, you know. So the important thing is that we have to understand that the outside, the non-devotees, I mean, they have all type of negative perception. They don't see any good in us. You know? Of course, that's their duty. Their duty is not to see any good in us. A demon shouldn't see any good in a devotee. But then we see the good in them. They're good resource of persons to be used in Krishna consciousness. So we preach to them, entice them, trick them to come and have darshan of the deities so that they can become purified. But that we do with tactfulness. Yes. They like Krishna consciousness then. If they love prasadam, they like Krishna consciousness. They are just pretending. Give them prasadam every day if possible. And for a short while, they will tell you one day they want to follow you to the temple. If they like prasadam, just try to see that this is your service to Prabhupada. And give them prasadam, if possible, every day. Arrange the best of prasadam. And they will love Krishna consciousness. Prasadam has done a lot of job, a lot of good job in changing people. One devotee, I was mentioned the other day, I think that was the new one I was mentioned. In Delhi, there was this devotee who used to be my personal assistant each time I come to the Delhi temple. He told me a story about his father and his mother. They are two in the family. He has an elder brother who is working. And he, when he was in college, so he got in touch with devotees of Hare Krishna. So he started coming to temple bed. His parents were always agitated. They would be so angry each time he goes to the temple. But again, we find that even Indian boys are very submissive to their parents. But actually, some of those boys who come in touch with ISKCON, they are the stubborn types among the Indian boys. Because In most cases, you find that in India, even in India, parents will hardly say, all right, go and be a devotee. No way. So this boy, he will come to the temple and stay even for some weekends. But the parents will be so angry. But each time he's going back home, before he goes back to campus, he will take nice prasad to the mother and father and his older brother. But they will like the prasad like anything. They hated him going to temple, but they loved the prasad like anything. So he just kept, you know, every weekend he would defy them and go to the temple and then get prasad. He's going back, he goes back with prasad to placate them. Now the mother is more serious than even the boy. He told me the mother chants 64 rounds on the Kadesi. He said, Maharaj, I can't even dream of chanting 32 rounds on a Kadesi. So, Prasadam is a good weapon. Sometimes, you know, the devotees, they feel in that, oh, these family members, they're just a bothering to me. They don't like Krishna consciousness. No. They like Krishna consciousness. You just that you have not been able to figure out the anger or the angle, the aspect of devotional service that they like. And prasadam in most cases they like. I know of a case of a one lady in Nigeria. We were living in the same estate at that time in near our temple there. So I used to go to their home to go and send some fax messages. And then because I became acquainted with her, so one time, during one Janma Sami, so I got some devotees to send her some prasada. And just after that, she decided to be a vegetarian. The younger brother would come to temple. But because she was involved in some business, the husband is a pilot, we were always moving back and forth. But she loves devotees like anything. So, if someone is interested, in most cases you find that there are ways we can track down practically everyone. There are ways. If even your family, our family members, if you give them prasad, see, again I give a typical example. See, I never met my family members for 16 years when I joined the movement. And the first time I was going, I just collected some prasad. I went with one devotee, so I collected some prasad. And they didn't mind whether I was away or whether I was with Hare Krishna or whatever. Their family member has come and has come with something to eat, so they just ate. So everybody just, and then some came challenge me, where's the thing you said you brought some sweets? So people like prasadam, and if we have a way to be able to create that avenue, they will become purified very fast. Prasadam, it's a big weapon. It's more than even talking to people to convince them. If someone, see, I'll tell you another story. Most of the things I do in academics is to be able to create some relationship with the professors, to the point that I do that even with their own secretaries. And I remember one professor, I go to the office practically every week, and I have some good relationship with the secretaries. And so the relationship got to a point that I could bring some prasad to them. And I started bringing the prasad. And it came to a point that any time I'm not carrying prasad, sometimes I'm out of the temple, I don't go from the temple to that office directly. So I may not be carrying prasad. It came to a point that if I don't carry prasad and go there, they start harassing me. And you won't say anything ill about the Hare Krishna before them. No. Then they started getting some books. They became interested in reading. And even the professor started chanting. They're so busy, they never got to the temple until I left that very location. But they are favorable. So this is the potency of prasad. I just had a similar experience the other day. Someone was complaining that should she just abandon these people? I said, which people? See, her parents are not in favor of her Krishna consciousness. I said, just because you're a devotee for a number of years, now you want to prove to your parents that you are very superior, you are very divine, and now you just will resort to quarrel. No, try to make some friendship. I said, go with prasadam. Many devotees have this type of problems, and you know, prasadam is the weapon. So if someone accepts prasadam, he's becoming purified. Prasadam is no different from Krishna. He is taking prasadam, he is directly swallowing Lord Krishna. And you know that Krishna, look at Krishna on the altar here, he's not standing straight. He stands like this. So if you swallow something that is not straight, it's very difficult to come out. So if they take prasadam, no, just a matter of time, they'll be devotees. Just a matter of time. You just keep, you know, giving them what they like, the prasadam, and very soon they become purified to the point that, but see, the danger is, if you keep giving the prasadam, the danger is someone will even become more serious than you expected. Like the example of this boy in Delhi, his mother became more serious. Mother is also initiated now, and he said the mother is more advanced than him. And each time they are traveling, the mother is traveling with the father, they will come to the temple in Delhi to stay for some days and all. You know, they're part of the devotional community, except that they have a home whereby they have to manage themselves. So we should be friendly with people, not judging them based on external values, that they don't subscribe to Krishna consciousness overtly. But if they are taking prasadam and they like prasadam, they like Krishna. They like Krishna consciousness. Yes. There's too many cases, you know, of prasadam changing people. Even Prabhupada, when he came to New York, one of his major weapons was gulab jamun. And then some of them would eat and, you know, come back and, you know, take the gulab jamun and eat, and that's how they got attracted. That is why we are also embarking on, you know, food distribution. You know, some people, they just take the prasadam and they like it and they want to come again. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this example of the Lord Krishna and Lord Balarama, both addressing anger in two completely different ways. Of course, no matter how big the anger is, Lord Balarama could conquer many ways. But there's a fearlessness that Lord Krishna is revealing about his approach to this anger.
Sure.
Yeah, a devotee living outside or inside the temple is the same thing. See, when someone is living in the temple and doesn't come to Mangalarati, does it really make him live in the temple? Someone is sleeping in this house and he doesn't come to Mangalarati. And someone who is living outside, he comes to Mangalarati. Who is living inside? Is someone living in this temple and doesn't come to class? And the Bhagavatam says, devotional service, one of the major, according to Prahlad, is hearing. And Kapila Dev said, the hearing has to be done in association with other devotees. It's not that you go and lock up yourself in a room or in an apartment. And if you try that, just get everybody in your home away, only you inside this beautiful mansion, only you. Go be there and chant 300,000 names of Lord Krishna. You see how many days you're going to do that. You'll be fried. The same holy name that you will be in association with other devotees, that the relishment will be increasing every moment. You do it alone and you see that you will get dried up. So devotional service has to be performed in association of other devotees, according to Kapila Muni. I'm Kapila Dev. This is what he said in the Bible. Therefore, we find that if someone says, well, I have deities in my home, I don't need to come for a Sunday program, I don't need to come for classes, I don't need to come for Guru Puja, I don't need to come for anything, it's a problem already. It's a matter of time, problem will manifest grossly. Therefore, the equation of distinction between a devotee living in the temple, a devotee not living in the temple, is again, it boils down to the concept of a demon. Whether someone is having 10 hands, that makes him a demon, or is a quality. Prabhupada mentions here is a quality. A devotee is known by his quality, his attraction to Lord Krishna, attraction to Lord Krishna's pastime, attraction to hearing about Lord Krishna's message, the message of God. I may be living in this temple and I don't really care because I'm getting some stipends to feed myself or to plan my hair. It doesn't really make me better than someone who is not living in the temple. If someone who is not living, really sleeping here, he comes for the classes, he comes for Mangalarati, he is better than someone who is living here and doesn't follow. Let's get these points clear. This is like, you know, the classical case is the case in India, the caste system. If your father is a doctor, you are born, does it make you a doctor? You have to go to medical school. After finishing your program, you have to go for residency. That will qualify you as a medical practitioner. For you to go to get a certification to go and practice. Just because I'm born by a medical doctor doesn't make me a medical doctor. It's just like if I'm born by a professor, doesn't make me a professor. You have to go to school. You need to develop some skills. So living in the temple doesn't make someone better than anybody else who is not living in the temple. The person who is living in the temple has been given ample opportunity to make speedy progress, rapid progress, if he takes advantage. What if I don't take advantage? I'll be given a chance as a human being to take advantage. I have a temple here to live in the temple. But what if I just say, I'm very busy. I can't come to Mangalarati. I'm very busy. I can't come to class. I'm very busy. I can't come to Sandirati. I'm busy, busy, busy. And the person who is living away from the temple, outside the temple, he comes to Desi Desi, she comes to Desi Desi every morning. She goes to work, comes back to come and do some service. Who is better off? I'll give you an example. During the time of Bhaktisiddhanta, there were some brahmacharis in the temple. And one brahmachari, he lost his kupins. And he was so upset. Kupins! You can tear any cloth, the saffron cloth, and use a scorpion the next moment. He was very disturbed. The whole day he was looking for his scorpions. A premature. And somebody else who was living outside, he lost so much of wealth. And he was not disturbed. He never complained. So between the brahmachari who is living in the temple and the person who is living outside, who is more devotionally developed? One person lost a copy. You know copy? The one we use, brahmacharis, we use as underwear. You tear it anywhere. You can get it anywhere. You know, you don't need money to go and even buy it in the market. You just tear the cloth anywhere and use. Some brahmachari was disturbed. Someone else who was not a brahmachari householder living outside, the same situation was applied to him. He lost some of his resources, some goods. He lost some money. He was not disturbed. He never even complained. So, these two examples are given to show that it is the mindset that matters. It's not the question of the location where you are. It's not the location. And this is a misconception that people have. And if we don't address these issues properly, then we begin to also, undermine the devotees who are living outside. And we think those of us who are living inside, we are superior. Or we think, we brahmacharis, we are superior. I'll give you another example. When Narada Muni was, going around to figure out the most exalted devotee, he went to Hanuman, and he praised Hanuman like anything. And you're wonderful. You're so dedicated to Ram. So Hanuman told him that he's not a devotee at all. That Narada, go to the Pandavas. Go and see what they are doing. Then you realize that, yes, I'm not a devotee. And when Narada was going, Hanuman drew him back. And he said, you know why I draw you back? Go with open hearts to the Pandavas. They are householders. Go with open heart and see their devotion to Lord Krishna. Hanuman went on to say, don't think we are brahmacharis. Because Hanuman is a brahmachari. Another is a brahmachari. So he told him, don't think, we are brahmachari. Go with open heart and see what is Pandavas, their dedication to Lord Krishna. So sometimes we have the tendency to think that we are living in the temple, we are better off than anything else, anybody else. Or we are brahmacharis, we are better than anyone else. We have sannyasis, we are better than anyone else. No one is better than anyone else before Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is looking at what we are holding back. What we are holding back. He sees that. So, I made sure people that have done this service. But I may have so much of potentials in me that I should be able to do 3 times more than that. I'll give an example. Bhaktisiddhanta Swami, my spiritual master, he did one thing to me. Okay? I was in one temple. So then he transferred me to another temple. And in the other temple that I went, he wanted me to do some things. So I was still doing those same things that I was doing when I was in the other temple, going out for boat distribution, going out for Harinam, going out for food distribution, and going to offices, meeting people in offices and preaching to them. So I wrote back to him that this is what I'm doing, because the same things I was doing in the previous temple. But he expected me, he expected some higher services from me. So when I wrote my report to him, he wrote back to me that, dear Vasudev, your report is very good, but all the things you told me in your report, every other devotee in this country can do it. He said, go to the professors and preach to them. Why? Because he sees that, you know, this guy, he has some skills, he has some potential. So why should he just do this harinam that everybody has to do, just book discipline that everybody has to do? No, come on, you go, this is what I wanted to do. So, the spiritual master, he knows the different qualities, the different skills, the different potentials in each and every one of us. So somebody may just do one thing and he feels, well, this is what Yugala Kishore has done. I've also done this. Spiritual master may come, he may be pleased with him, and you who did the same thing, he will not be pleased with you. Because he knows that you have, you know, greater potentials. You should have done 3 times more than that. So again, it boils to the point that if we are living in the temple, we have ample opportunity to be able to do more service, increase our sadhana like anything. But we keep our sadhana at a low ebb. Then what is the advantage of living in the temple? There's no use. So that distinction, we should not be making it, because Krishna is looking at our hearts. He's looking how much we are surrendering unto him. If someone is living in the temple, he is surrendering more and more to Krishna, good, he makes some serious advancement in a short while. But if someone is living outside, and you see, living outside is more difficult to perform devotional service, especially, take for instance, if someone is working, if someone has a job, he has to go, he has like 3 things to manage. He has to manage his job, he has to manage his devotional service, he has to manage his family. And a devotee is living in a temple, take for instance, a person who is not even married, he had just one thing to do, just service to Krishna. Krishna, 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 that's it. And then that person has 3 problems to deal with. And he is attending the classes more than the person who is living in the temple. He is doing, is going to work and then come back to do even the service that the person who is living in the temple is also doing. Then we have to understand that that person is going to make quick progress more than the person who is supposed to live in the temple and not taking advantage. He eats and then he goes to sleep. Yes, I think we have to end the class. What do you think? Okay. Okay. Can you repeat that? I don't understand what you mean.
Uh-huh.
It dissolves. No, he has to change his, the tread. Yeah, he has to change the tread.
Yeah.
No. If the tread is just the problem, like we change our tread, you know, sometimes the devotee feels, oh, I need to change my tread. Today is a currency, I need to change my tread. But sometimes also, they just change the tread unnecessarily, because like a fashion, you know? But then I know that the deity's tread, like Krishna's tread, we used to change it. I remember when I was still doing altar work, we used to change it like every currency and then pass out the other one as maha to devotees. So tread, changing of tread is not a problem. You don't need to take another initiation. You don't need to. And if someone was asking me some question, then I was trying to figure out about the exact thing to do from some senior sciences. And then I got a mail from I got a mail from my science minister. Whether I have asked this question to another science, I said, no, I've not asked. I'm just beginning with you. I'm trying to investigate so that, you know, I know how to guide the people properly. So yeah, someone was asking me, she took initiation in Sri Sampadaya, and whether can she take initiation again in ISKCON and all these things. So the thread, I mean, you can change, you always change the thread. It's not that you have to. Yeah, you're trying to ask another question?
Yes. So Krishna consciousness, we have become, you say pure Krishna consciousness. Mm. Imagine Krishna consciousness. I mean, so Krishna conscious.
What's the question? What's the question? Mukunda, what is your question?
So, actually, we have become Krishna conscious no matter where we are, what time it is, we have to try to become always Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Associated.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing about our devotional cultivation is Smarta Vyat, Satatam Vishnu, Vishmata Vyat. Always to remember Vishnu or Krishna and never to forget Krishna or Vishnu. Alright. Yes. How? What?
Why does he use the term original referring to Narayan sometimes in forehand form when Krishna is the original? Why does he say the original? Sometimes he refers to Narayan as original.
Yeah. I have had Vasana Swami giving an explanation to this. And his explanation is that originally, Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam according to the Bhagavatam, and Krishna is the original, is the source of all of these incarnations. But Narayan is also Krishna, Krishna's expansion. And therefore, just like we find that Balaram is exactly Krishna, it's just the difference is just the, you know, the form. Narayan is also an expansion of Krishna, and the idea is that with Narayan, it's just some qualities a little bit less than Krishna. And so when we find Krishna or Narayan, I mean, they are simply interplays of the Antaranga, interplays of the Antaranga Shakti. And by dint of that interplay, Krishna will want to satisfy a particular situation based on the individual's devotion, and he will manifest as Narayan. Whereas another situation, I mean, the typical case is the case of Vasudeva, Ananda Maharaj, or Devaki, and Manu Yasoda. Now, the Krishna who appeared before Manu Yasoda and Devaki, Devaki and Vasudeva in Mathura, I mean, is to reciprocate their devotion. He appeared as Narayana. Okay? And sometimes some people make an argument that if Krishna is the original, if the Krishna 200 form is the original form, then why did he first appear to Devaki and Vasudeva in the Narayan form? But so our argument is, go to the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna make a similar argument that what is the best form of worship? And Krishna said, it is these 200 forms standing right before you here. Meditate on me on these 200 forms. And so we find that the 200 form is original form, but then the Narayan is also an emanation from Lord Krishna, and Krishna will want to satisfy his devotees according to their devotion. Some people will go to the Vaikuntha lokas. And so they will have to worship that Narayan form. And the Narayan form is actually worshiping on reverence. Whereas the Lord Krishna's form, I mean, there are some people who are relating with Lord Krishna are simply friends. They jump onto Lord Krishna's soldier and they play around with him. They are on a picnic and all this other stuff. Narayan, you don't go on a picnic with Narayan. It's worship with awe and reverence. But the same Krishna is displaying different type of leelas according to the individual devotees. And so he has to manifest different type of qualities, different forms to be able to suit the purpose of the devotee. But we don't really distinguish so much between Krishna and Narayan, except that if you go into the deities, then there are less qualities of the Godhead in Narayan than in Krishna. It's almost like the same thing. Are we going to close this class today? Okay. Beg your pardon? Myself? I'm not a guru, I'm just a brahmachari. I'm not certain that the gurus are suddenly bothering me with this type of stuff. I wanted to remain just a simple seance for the rest of my life. So anyway, in ISKCON we have a procedure. Okay? Before someone starts initiating, he has to get an authority from the GBC. In most cases, it's devotees who have to petition the GBC that they want this person to be an initiating guru. Because, see, to be a guru in ISKCON is a very simple thing. It is more difficult to be a sannyasi than to be a guru. Anybody can be a guru. In fact, for a sannyasi, you have to get all of your constituency to endorse it. If you have to take for instance somebody here wants to be a sannyasi, he has to be so nice. Nowadays, you have to be so nice that nobody raises accusing fingers to him. If one person rises to the GBC that, oh, this person is very harsh, he did like this to me, he's not qualified yet. they won't give any sayas initiation. They would approve it. That's how it's operational now, because in the past people take sayas and then, they tend to like make everybody else like a servant, I'm superior and all that. But it's not like that. It's a matter of really seeing yourself as that's a servant of everyone. Take for instance, the sannyasi has no home, and the whole world should be his family. He should live that practical example that every person's home is his home. So how will you fit into anybody's home if you don't have proper relationship with the people? So to be a sannyasi now is more difficult than being a guru. A guru anybody could be. So for as far as initiating is concerned, I'm not really having that in mind right now. I want to see how I'm going to be able to help the devotees as much as possible. That's it. Also, to become an initiating guru, it's a heavy duty, Even this simple traveling around, I'm having more telephone calls than every other time in my life, Because now I'm becoming more and more exposed to the devotees, and this person will call, and this person will send an email. I like that, and because that is also one of my commitments to the Vaishnava assembly, that I want to really be able to see myself as an agent of change in people's life, and therefore try to see how best to be able to help the devotees whenever they are in need. And as far as initiation is concerned, I'm not a guru. This is the answer. Yeah. All right. Sisi Radha Kunjali Hari Ki
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.